Nice job by Clint Sterner. Real nice job.
Dive into the mind of former NFL quarterback Clint Sterner.
I was thinking about coming out of the shoot here and telling y'all about my new boots that I got on, but y'all want to talk about puppy chow?
What is that, ostrich?
Hell no, it's python.
It's Sturdy's Daily.
Before we get to that boner.
On The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Powered by, Dirty's Daily is powered by my boy Ron, the show Hughley, and Reginald Atitula. Was going to do it yesterday, but you boys weren't here. I like to do it when you're present, so I can look you in the eyes, man. Proud of you, bro. Proud of you, what you and Reg did, man. I'm always proud to call you guys my brothers, but when you do something like this, even more so, I want to tell the people about it. You know, I want to tell the people about our relationship and how proud I am of what y'all did, man. Big shout out to the fellas, the Radiothon, 12 hours of radio. I'm going to tell you, y'all, as many of y'all know, boy, sometimes it's hard for your boy to get through four, much less 12. 12 hours of radio and all for the greater good. The Houston Food Bank. How many meals did y'all ultimately raise, Ron?
You all helped us raise over 72,000 meals. Is how much you guys were able to help the Houston Food Bank with.
Turn them dollars into meals, which ultimately is what the Houston Food Bank is all about. 72,000 plus this year. If you look at the run that Ron and Reg have had and what the start that they've had to this Radiothon, $50,000+ in the first 2 years. When they could have just chose to take their ass home after work, when they could have chose not spend the extra time meeting with the boss man and meeting together and scheduling everything and yada, yada, yada. They could have just took the easy route and not raised a dollar. Instead, they invested their time, their energy, their effort, and $50,000 later in the first 2 years, folks around Houston are eating. More folks around Houston are eating. And I'm going to tell you what, the drive is going to Oak and Iron, and it's going to be a good one. Do we know who bought it? Do we know who we're eating with?
We do not know who bought it. We do not know who bought it because this year we got a little bit more professional, had an auction site that you could go.
Had a little help.
Yeah, we don't know. We saw second, like snippets of the email of who it was, but somebody got us.
Yeah, we go Oak and Iron. It's going to be a good time no matter what. That is a tremendous place with great food and most impressively, Oak and Iron. There's a lot to love about them, but most impressively, from an ownership perspective, boy, the hospitality is real. The Southern hospitality is real. So whether you're there when we are there, the drive is there. Slide by Oak and Iron up on the north side, man. Slide by there and check that place out. I promise you. Promise you, you will not be disappointed. Big shout out to anybody and everybody that donated, no matter how little or how much you donated. We greatly appreciate it, but I wanted to make sure and we acknowledge the fellas, and we should do so for an extended period of time. More people should take the time to put this kind of thing together, and we'd be a better place because of it, right? I tell you, it's motivating, Ron. We've always talked about doing a golf tournament kind of in my brother's name and that kind of deal. We've always talked about it. To see you guys do it, it motivates me to put some put some effort behind it and make it happen. So appreciate what you guys did, my man. Appreciate what you guys
appreciate
did.
Appreciate it, man.
Now, what I did not appreciate, what I did not appreciate happened while you was gone. Mike Burrow.
Oh, boy.
Got to go. He got to go, boys. I tried to hang in there with Joe Espada. I tried to hang in there with Mike. And the reality of it is I just can't do it any longer. And look, I know the Nationals. I know they're they swing the bats. I know they're one of the better lineups in baseball. I get it. But when you get spotted a 5-run lead, 6-1 it was. 6-1 it was going into the bottom of three.
We sucked.
And Mike commenced to doing what Mike does. He ends up going 4 1/3, gives up 9 hits, gives up 10 runs, 7 of which were earned, 2 walks, 3 Ks. And you know it, we got the stat line. The only pitcher that I can ever recall in our my seven years of doing radio and my 48 years of being a fan, the only pitcher I can ever recall that I cannot look at any stat line, good, bad, or indifferent, without sliding across there and looking at how many home runs he gives up.
Yep. Burrowhead.
Every start.
Gave up two bombs, ERA 5.99. We've hung on as long as we can. He's got to go. Ron, simply put, this team, as you said multiple times today, this team is going to have to do everything they can, given all the injuries that they've had. They're going to have to do everything they can at every position, but damn sure in the starting rotation, to continue to dig out of this hole and to claim one of these wild card spots or maybe even win the division, and you just can't afford to continue to trot Mike Burrows out there. You can't do it. It just absolutely cannot happen. And the reason that I'm so adamant about it at this point is one reason. You got Christian Javier on the roster with the team in the dugout in a bullpen role, and that has to change. If you've ever called an audible Joe Espada, if you've ever called an audible Dana Brown, now is the time. Obviously, we got the news. They must be listening to The Drive. We got the news. Mike Burrows has been sent to Sugar Land. So somebody is going to have to fill that spot in the rotation. I'm going to assume that it's going to be Christian Javier, Ron, and I guess 5 games from now, whenever that spot comes around again in the rotation, I got to believe it's going to be Christian Javier.
Yeah, and he went 2 innings the other day, his first appearance since coming back. And he did give up a homer, or he gave up a home run. I'm sorry, it's like you when you brought up the stat line, I think about him and the Celtics. Whenever the Celtics play, I immediately go and see what did they do from the 3-point line, because that determines how the game went. And every time I do with Mike, and Mike banged out 2 and
the Burrow boxes.
This time he wasn't able to avoid not having people on base on this occasion, but. It went pretty well. 2 innings, 4 strikeouts, which was a big issue with him. His first go around, he was not getting swings and misses at a rate that we are normally used to seeing Christian Javier when he is going well to do. But 4 strikeouts, 1 walk in those 2 innings, and gave up the 1 home run and 1 earned run. It's his time. You cannot, and you talked about this a lot, they are not in the space where they have the luxury of a lead. They have the luxury of a lead in the division, a lead like their playoff spot is secure. No, they don't. They don't have that. And yes, you feel better about it with them 3 out of the West and a game and a half out of the wild card, and now just 1 team ahead of them in the wild card. You feel good about it, but you can't operate and just give away games. And you cannot lose games to the Washington Nationals when you score 11 runs and you have a 6-1 lead in the third inning. You can't lose that game. Can't do it.
Yeah, those are the games that you typically win because Yordan is on your team. But they lost one last night. On top of Javier being in the bigs and him being an option, the likely option to step into that fifth starter in the 5-man rotation, on top of Javier being ready and available, I do want to note Ronel Blanco and Lance McCullers.
That's
Lance
right.
is going to start tonight in Sugar Land, and Ronel Blanco will make an appearance tonight at some point in Sugar Land. Also, Jeremy Pena starting a rehab stint in Sugar Land. So if you want to get to if you're in that area and you want to get to a Sugar Land game, Space Cowboy game, tonight's the night, because you're going to see some big leaguers on the diamond for sure. But those two guys are both going to get run tonight in Sugar Land, as well as it's worth noting that Hayden Wisniewski went 4 innings and gave up 1 run. I believe it was Sunday, maybe Saturday, Sunday, a couple days ago. I just don't know exactly.
What was it with the hooks?
It didn't say. I don't think I saw where. I didn't look at the jersey that he had on, but he's up to at least throwing 4 innings worth of pitches. And so he is not far away. So it's not all, given what we've seen from Javier this year. I know there's, and look, I'll be honest with you. I'm trying here. I'm trying, Christian. I'm trying. There's no reason to have a ton of confidence in Christian Javier, other than before this year he'd been in some high leverage situations, had pitched well, he's had some really good stuff in the past. This year in the big leagues, he's left a lot to be desired, but he did have a couple little outings there in Sugar Land before getting called up that were really impressive. So hopefully Christian Javier can find his footing and be that guy, but if he can't, we've got several starters or guys that have starting ability. I want to be careful how I couch them. We got several starters coming down the pike here that could be options. Again, Ronel Blanco, Lance McCullers, and Hayden Wisniewski. So it's there's never been a better reason, more reason. There's never been more of a better timing to send Mike Burrow's packing than right now, because you've got a right now answer and you've got three dudes coming up the pike that are going to be options if the Christian Javier thing doesn't take hold pretty quickly.
And again, I don't mean to take out Mike.
No, it's all right.
But
he's earned to do it.
But Mike should have to run through all of those guys you've named before he sits foot back on a mound for the Astros this year.
It sucks to suck.
Yeah,
like
I agree.
Should, you know what I mean? Like
all
he
those
should,
guys should get all, run before.
It's, something should happen to all of those guys. What I'm saying is Mike Burrow should not pitch again for the Astros.
No.
And because you've got the five starters when you add Javier into it that you got now. You got Kaiway, who I think should be in front of him. He should have to run through Kaiway. I think, obviously, McCullers. I think if Ronel gets back, he's pitching at AAA Sugarland. He should have to get through him. He should have to – did I say Lance?
You hadn't said Lance.
Lance, yeah. He should have to get through Lance.
You threw O'Thong in there.
If Hayden Wisniewski can get rolling, it's something he should – there should be five guys. And I just say this because they seem to have some sort of a flirtation with getting him back in.
Can't right, wait.
This should have happened a minute ago.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I think
Blue Ball should be in front of him.
Well, he was behind him last night and he gave up some he didn't help the cause. He didn't help Mike. He didn't help old Mike's case out, and I think he gave up a couple of those runs after Mike left.
Slam. I mean, he was inspired by Mike. He gave up a grand slam.
He gave up a granny, and two of them were his. Two of them was Mike. He split them with Mike.
Split them up. Baby.
But yeah, look, I mean, I think the good news, bad news is Burrows was bad again. Good news is we've got some options here, some fan favorites that if they get their footing, it could be fun to watch in a good second half or backstretch to this season. Ron, before we get out of Dirty's Daily, I do want to give you the opportunity to comment, because you were out yesterday. The Astros taking that Rays series, albeit in a tad bit unorthodox in sense of the Hunter Brown's wheels coming off and having to score, what was it, 11 runs or 12 runs in a game that Hunter Brown started in order to win it. I know it's a little bit unorthodox, but taking 2 of 3 from the Tampa Bay Rays, given the caliber ball they were playing, number one, and number two, the Yordan Alvarez just hot streak is just absolutely ridiculous. I know you didn't get a chance to comment on those couple of things there. Just your thoughts on the Rays series taking that, and then Yordan's performance.
Idiots. Man, I just
pitching to it.
I just like I don't. Scott Service has lost his job due to this several years ago. Like I am not kidding. You have got to consider putting him on. I don't care if you're putting the tying runs on base, the go-ahead run on base. Hell, I don't even care right now, late in games, if you're walking in a run. Isak Paredes has got to beat me. Can't do it. He's got to beat me. Now, also off of that, I think it was good for, I think, two things in that series that's even more important than that. I mean, if idiots are going to continue to allow Yordan to go ahead and end games, okay, that's fine. One of the great things that I loved is Yordan wasn't thinking crazy either. Coming around third base, he was not going to have a Kendrys Morales situation. He was not going to get injured. He is gingerly making his way to the plate. I don't know if you remember Kendrys Morales, power hitter for the Angels, tore his ACL, jumping onto the plate after a walk-off. He avoided that water that they was throwing at him, and it was nice, stepped on the plate, that was good. But I think the two bigger things was Pete Lambert going through and winning a 2-0 game, and then Spencer Arrighetti and his performance. I think those were probably bigger than the Yordan day, which was amazing. He's just the MVP, and he's just going to have to It is so much is going to happen for him to lose that.
Yep.
Lose his grips on that. But I think the pitching from those two were even more important over that weekend.
Jordan's always going to give you a chance in a series because he's got potential of winning a couple of games his damn self. And then, as you mentioned, I agree wholeheartedly. Spencer Arrighetti getting back on track to pitching well. And then just Peter Lambert, man, just giving you another game worth the sample size to believe in what he's doing. But the thought that you could take a game from a team that or a series from a team that was hot as the Rays and as good as the Rays are, you can take a series and with Hunter Brown's wheels coming off in what, four and a third, the thought that you can accomplish that, it's got to give the guys confidence. It's got to kind of change the narrative around the Astros. And so,
but they had run seven in a row coming in.
Eight.
And then eight when they beat the Astros.
I thought it was 8-9, but either way, it's a hell of a run. Whatever.
I mean, I can't remember how many times they beat the Royals
right.
before they came.
You'd like to forget a couple of them.
Before they came to Houston, it might have three, four times. I don't know. They had to have position players pitch multiple times in that series, so they just whooped their ass. No, man, it was a big weekend. But again, you cannot allow Mike to just zap that away.
Yeah.
Because you know, like, who's fired up about tonight? Who's fired up and feels good about what Imai is going to give him tonight? You just can't have.
Yeah.
We said that last week. You can't have those two back to back. You can't. Who knows what that mound's going to look like? There might be a miss.
My man was out there throwing pitching off of it yesterday. Did you hear that? Did you hear that report?
Did he have to get before, out there early?
Early in the morning, he was out there pitching off the mound, trying to get used to it.
I hope they got them bowls out there. Hopefully, he got that they like.
Them acai bowls?
I hope they got them bowls.
Hey, I'd have a truck full following the Astros schedule around.
I'm telling you, man. All right. Just a blunder. Reggie said yesterday's performance for Team USA just absolutely kills any momentum that they put together and getting everybody engaged with how bad they were yesterday. Did you think it was a choke job, or was this just a situation of they just ran up against a top 10 team in the world and a team that's better than them? We'll discuss that next.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
The wall could jump. Tillman over the net!
A few moments later.
Trossard to the byline, gets across, into Ketelaar, sizing up, and Belgium retake the lead. Moments later, Charles de Ketelaar climbs the ladder, his second goal, and the U.S. right back where they were.
Well, it had a moment, didn't it? They had that moment, man. My house went crazy when they tied it up, and Tillman did it again.
Mine went crazy, too, for all of 90 seconds.
You ain't lying, man. You couldn't even get yourself seated again, man. I couldn't even go up and fill my drink up. Next thing you know, they're down there in just an awful turnover that leads to another score. And it's just shell-shocked. And that was a part of it, right? Right from the beginning, I heard Carly Lloyd after the game said it felt like they lost the game before they even got on the pitch, she said. She said before they got off the bus. They lost the game. And 713-572-4610, YouTube and Twitch, you can jump in on this as well. I think it is clearly both, right? We can have both. But what did you, when you watched the game, did you have the feel that it was more, man, this is the U.S. choking, self-inflicted, not ready for the moment moves? Or did you watch it and feel like, man, Belgium's just, they're just a better team, right? You're just going to lose games to better teams. I don't necessarily think, let's say 2 years ago, I don't necessarily think that the Texans choked against the Chiefs in the playoffs. I think they just lost to the better team. I mean, their offensive line was going, you're going to have some problems with Fisher going against Chris Jones by himself. Probably shouldn't have had that happen. But that didn't feel like last year. I think there was more of a feeling that the Texans lost that, like they were the ones, CJ at the helm of it. They were the ones that lost the game. Where did you feel? How did you feel about this one?
Oh, I mean, I felt like the United States was, they choked. They weren't prepared. They were overwhelmed. The moment was too big. I think if anything, like game-wise, other than not being prepared and other than being shell-shocked and And I mean, I'd hate to say take your opponent lightly. I don't know why you would do that in that situation. I mean, if anything, I thought Belgium had a significantly better game plan. I don't know the schemes of the game, but it appeared that what they were trying to do, they were having more success at doing what their plan was than the United States was. But from a player perspective, it clearly was a choke, a unprepared, a overwhelmed, and it was that way for me. What Tyler just played, the penalty kick or whatever it was, a free kick, I don't even know what the difference is, but the score, the goal that they scored, kick, yeah. I mean, that was outstanding. That was big time. I think that was the only legit big moment in this game for the Americans. Early on,
he had to make an incredible save as they were putting pressure early on.
Yeah.
And that was just a precursor to he's going to be under fire.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that the United States was it appeared that they were completely outmanned, but if you really watched, it was Belgium. They weren't significantly better. It was a bad outing, obviously, for the United States, and what piss poor timing in a round of 16.
Yeah, I think one of the things we heard from experts throughout, and as we said, what did you feel like it was more of? Because I think there was some self-inflicted wounds, choking, and I think Belgium was a better team. They were a better team because I'm guessing the United States probably made some mistakes like this before and got away with it against lesser teams. Right. So Belgium, I think there's a little bit of both, but what did you feel like it was more of? Did you watch that game and think this is the U.S. choking more, or did you think, well, they're just losing to a better team? And like, I almost rode through this to a point where I find it hard to blame game plan, not coaching, to an extent, because I mean, obviously, your guys weren't ready to go out there and compete for some reason. They didn't play at the level of aggressiveness that they had played throughout the tournament. So that's got to fall not only on them but some of the coach. But it just seemed like they were so out of it, or the moment was so big for them that like whatever they even talked about seemed like it went out the window. Whatever the game plan was, because he was over there drop kicking water bottles. He was hitting stuff like what are y'all over there doing, right? And it seemed like, you know, bad nervous. You know, sometimes there's good nervous before the game that you feel. They had bad nervous. They looked like they were like oh my God, they're so much better than us. We just saw them. They beat us 5-2. We're intimidated. We're gonna play different. So I think I do. I felt like the mistakes were preventable. Like the first goal was led to three guys who had a chance to clear the ball, and none of them reacted to touch it. And the guy from Belgium came in, and that led to the first goal. It was a rough watch to a man that all of them said they picked the worst time to play their worst game. By far, to play their worst game, many people spoke.
Well, the interesting thing is that there was never a moment in that game where an American player stood out as being one of the better players on the field, or the pitch, I'm sorry. I think we can talk about stars if you want to. We can talk about injuries if you want to. But there was never a moment where it was like, yeah, we got one dude that's better than their guys. There was never a moment schematically where they changed what they were doing, kicking it around the outside and trying to get a corner kick when Belgium was doubling them and blocking the entry. They couldn't even get it in to where you could potentially, you know, have a shot. At halftime, I think it was 14 shots on goal for Belgium and four, I think it was, maybe three for the United States. I mean, and then you come out the second half.
It was 8-0 before the free kick that led to the goal.
Yeah, it just seemed like we kept trying the same stuff, which, again, I don't know what the answer is in soccer, but I know it can't be. I know you watch other teams and you watch them try different entry points and different approaches. And it just seemed like, man, the Americans just couldn't. They couldn't complete what appeared to be just simple passes at times.
Yeah, that's the thing is, and watching some of the other matches, they're like Argentina is better than Egypt. They were favored against Egypt. But you didn't, when you watched them, it didn't appear like Egypt fought it.
Was outclassed, yeah.
They didn't like their last two, Cape Verde was they are a lesser team with lesser talent than Argentina. But when you watch them play, Cape Verde didn't seem to think it. Man, the Team USA looked like they knew that they were playing in a way that they were a lot better than them. And just do it like that. I don't think that goalie would do that a million times if you get just that mistake.
I never had confidence in that guy watching soccer. Like he didn't seem like a real confident guy to me.
Well, you know what? There may be an issue there, Clinton Tyler, that your goalie is or players that you have are MLS players. Like unless it's you know a certain you know like Messi who is playing over there because he's getting paid, man. Like I'm telling you, boy, there's
it's like
these guys
the Skeeters to the Olympics.
Yeah, these guys aren't the great players aren't playing in the MLS. Space Cowboys. Like there has got to be a goalie somewhere around the league that is playing somewhere else in the United States that's better than the so that I mean maybe that's rudeness and I don't know if I know soccer well enough to say that, but I would just be like, damn, I wonder how many other players on the team are playing for an MLS team.
Yeah, how many of the opponents you got to have MLS
opponents
goalies?
Or the players on the United States. I wonder
how many of our guys are.
I don't
are
even. I don't know. I know most of the good ones are playing in, you know, leagues where they can really make money.
Yeah,
you know, around like, but I
traitors.
I don't know. It was
come home and play for less, man. Get these leagues right.
get these leagues right. Play for less. No, that was rough. They look like they were. It looked like like I said to you, Vanderbilt football. Ooh, boy, they took care of South Carolina. Ooh, had a good non-conference win. They looked good. Then they played Alabama. It was 31-7. Like everybody knew it. That was a rough one. That was a rough one. All right, coming up, Kansas City Chiefs. When you see that team. Are you still, I ain't saying scared. The Texans shouldn't be scared of anybody, and Texans fans shouldn't be scared of any teams. Do they still give you concerns? Do they still give you major concerns? You're lying if they didn't over the past years. You're almost cussed. You're lying. Do they still give you concerns? We'll discuss that coming up next.
Bundle Rooski.
Well, hey, boys.
Sports Radio 610 presents
Another
The Drive with Sterner and Hubley.
I'm trying to get through a read quick. Did I hit the wrong button?
That was live, son.
That's live, baby. We're discussing some
things to come for the Drive family.
That's right, some things to come for the Drive family, as Tyler said. 713-572-4610. We appreciate you jumping in with this 5 o'clock fire coming up in just a bit. The Chiefs, the Kansas City Chiefs. We've done the concern meter for the last couple of weeks leading into training camp of AFC contending teams. And I'm wondering where you are. We've done most of them. We've talked about the Ravens. We've talked about the Bills. We've talked about some of the top teams. When you see the Chiefs, when you think about the Chiefs, who have been the class of the AFC, I will not hear any of your lying texts that say that you did not have concern about the Chiefs before.
Oh, thank you.
You're liars. And it's silliness. It's like a Royals fan saying they had no concern about the Astros over the last half decade. No, they've been the best team in baseball. You've had concerns. Now, where is it at now? What is the level of concern? And to be honest with you, with their coach and their quarterback, you're going to have some level of concern. Do you still view the Chiefs as the same, whew, we got to play our A game? Because I feel like going into games, Tyler, is that the thought? Over the past several years, when you've played the Chiefs, and they played the Chiefs in the regular season – multiple times in this stretch and in the playoffs. It felt like the Texans got to have an A-game type of performance.
Oh, yeah, they're the top tier of the NFL. They're in the top tier of the NFL, especially the AFC, for sure.
Last year, they stunk it up. They were 6-11. They had some injuries. They had some age. There's some stuff. They've had to retool some things. They got Kenneth Walker, was probably their big offseason move, getting the new running back. They had two first-round picks in the draft. They got the best, many people believe, the best corner in the draft. They moved up to 6 to get him. They got Peter Woods, who was the number one college football player coming into the to his college career at Clemson. And then R. Mason Thomas, another edge rusher from Oklahoma. Those are top three picks. They've retooled their team, but still at the heart of it, Clint, Andy Reid, Travis Kelce, Patrick Mahomes, Chris Jones, they are still there. What's your feeling when you see the Chiefs now from a Texans perspective?
I got a 7. And it's specifically for precisely for the reason you mentioned out of the gate, Andy Reid and Pat Mahomes. I'll never doubt those guys. I've got them at a 7 out of respect for them. I don't have a whole lot of faith in the team. I like Kenneth Walker, Ron. I like Creed Humphreys. I like Trey Smith. Hell, Josh Simmons, I think I saw a picture of him the other day, looks like a Greek god.
Yeah, if he can stay, if he can play.
Yeah, I mean, so look, there's a lot to like, but if their plan moving forward is to have a more predominant run game, thank you. I would love for them to turn around and put the ball in Kenneth Walker's hands instead of give it to Pat all day long. I would love for the approach and for them to waste time, I shouldn't say waste because it could be really good. Even if it's good, even if it's successful, I would rather them turn around and have a successful run game and spend reps and energy and effort throughout, getting that run game going other than having to deal with what we dealt with over the last handful of seasons with Pat Mahomes back there working his magic, throwing it all over the park in that freestyle fashion that he has. So, I don't have a lot of faith in their pass catchers. Rashee Rice, I don't even know if he's going to be available at this point in time. Who knows what's going to happen?
His is a lot more of his availability.
Yeah,
he's just kind of a knucklehead.
Yeah, right. And look, knuckleheads like that, even if they do stay out of trouble long enough to get on the field, typically don't take care of their body, so they're probably going to be injured. And so, not that the last one wasn't just a freak injury, but knuckleheads typically are knuckleheads and cause problems. And so I don't really like what they kind of how they've armed Pat from a pass game perspective. And I would greatly appreciate them spend time trying to run the football. So I'm at a 7 out of respect for the greatness that is Andy Reid and Pat Mahomes. But I'll be honest with you, I'm not.
So it sounds like you don't look at this and feel like a Super Bowl type team.
Well, I'll never doubt them because it's again of those two guys. They can when you got those two guys, you can make a run. You can overcome, some crazy odds. If need be. So I'm not going to doubt those guys. But yeah, I don't look at this team and go, yeah, boy, they are locked and loaded and ready to make a run. In the way that you look at some other teams. I think that Maybe times are changing in Kansas City, and I'm not overly concerned about them, but I'm giving them a 7. I'm giving them a 7.
Frank, you're wondering where we're at. Chiefs couldn't hold Tank Dell. Tank went out early in the third quarter with 100 receiving yards. My only concern for the Texans playing the Chiefs are the refs. Mahomes has been on the slide for the last 2 years. The Chiefs don't scare me. The Texans have played and now competed with the best except for the Ravens. The Ravens are the only team that scares me. My thought with the Chiefs is they just have questions right now. And to me, this team has for a long time really operated, and your feeling on this team was about Patrick Mahomes. And right now that is the greatest question. He has not missed anything. He seems to be, in a crazy way, on track to play and start the season. There was question with how late he got injured. He got injured in week 14 last year and tore an ACL and an LCL, two ligaments in his knee. But he has been at all OTAs. He has been at all mandatory mini camps, and they expect him to be right there, and he expects to go in training camp. So I think a lot of it, to me, centers around where he is. I think they have actually made some improvements on their team, and from the receiving thing, I think they are probably a team that's primed to add one of these veterans that are out here, and the one they've been connected to the most is the one that they used to have on their team in Tyreek Hill. Who knows how healthy he'll be or how long it'll take, but I don't think they're done at the receiving spot. But some of their defensive moves, they needed to improve their pass rush. I think they feel like they've done that. They need to get younger in the secondary. I feel like they feel like they have done that. So there are some good spots, but I think it all centers around how long will it take for us to see the Patrick Mahomes that has been the guy that's made up for deficiencies across the roster, right? This is not the – they've had worse receiving cores where MVS and a rookie Rashee Rice won a Super Bowl with that is a group, a team that had the most drops in the NFL and still, you know, won a Super Bowl. So we've seen them get to a space, but a lot of that has had to do with how good Mahomes and how good Andy Reid is.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think the Texans should be scared of them. And to me, I don't even, as I said, I think the Ravens are the team that seems to give the Texans the most problems. But, I mean, again, with as you said, those two dudes up top, the winning culture that they have, Steve Spagnuolo, Chris Jones, who's a problem, those, you know, they create a situation. Right?
Well, I think we've seen them in their prime change their identity and win Super Bowls with multiple identities, as you mentioned. I do wonder, Father Time is starting to creep, obviously, on Travis Kelce. And you know, Pat Mahomes with the injury, Father Time obviously is going to play a part in that, obviously. So, you know, I wonder if it's not just the changing of the identity that we've seen them have success with as much as it is that, coupled with, hey, man, there's Father Time, coupled with, hey, man, the roster offensively, again, is not what maybe it once was when they were all young and dumb, if you know what I mean. So that's the one thing for me in Kansas City. I ain't doubting them. I mean, I ain't betting against them, but I'm just not as concerned as I would be if they were all fresh.
I think there's an argument their biggest offseason move is getting Eric Bieniemy as the coordinator back.
Yeah.
Just kind of overall, if you hear some of them talk about they were really loose a lot with penalties, especially offensively. The focus seemed to be out. There's a thought that he may be the personal accompany of Rashee Rice himself,
right,
to try to help things. But that they're trying to, I guess, go back to get some of the old school roots they had when they were really in their prime, and bringing Eric Bieniemy back, who also has had some stops. He was just in Chicago with Ben Johnson and that passing or that running game, which he was already a really good running back coach to begin with. So their run game should improve with Walker and his addition.
You think about, you add that intensity on a day-to-day basis from a coaching perspective to a team that didn't just win a Super Bowl, but they were 6-11.
Yeah,
that's got to be a lot easier to coach that team and that 6-11 than one that just come off of a Super Bowl. So could be a beautiful, I would say marriage, but I guess they're circling back and gonna get this thing back, get the band back together.
They've got more questions than they have had in years, and the biggest question is their quarterback, which has not been a major question. By the way, did y'all hear that? Michael Irvin is going to be contributing to the Home Run Derby coverage for Netflix.
I did not see that. What is he going to bring to that?
I will be watching
that. Does that reel you in a little bit more?
Oh yeah.
An awkward fit. I'm interested.
Mike said, "I'm looking forward to going out and being around and showcasing the Home Run Derby for Netflix and interviewing guys to bring them on my White House show and everything." Irvin said, "I know it's Philadelphia, so I've got to walk amongst them, but I'm willing. let them know I come in peace. You can just hear him say it. Are they going to have him with a mic interviewing people?
I don't know, but I got a feel it's going to start pretty low key, and then by the end of the night he's going to be sweating profusely, screaming, running around
the
field.
He's going to pick the guy.
Oh, no doubt.
Whatever it is that they do with Jameis, I feel like they should do with Mike. However, Fox does a great job of how they use and deploy Jameis Winston. I feel like, but that is just odd. Who could set up a Netflix and say, "Hey man, let's get Michael Irvin a part of this home run derby." Damn it, you are dying to compete. All right,
coming up, bring some edge.
I'm telling you, man. Coming up, 5 o'clock fire. We'll get you ready for the Astros in D.C. for Game 2 of this series. But there are a lot of news and notes with the roster and potential guys coming back that we need to let you know about. So we'll get you ready for all of that. The USA, obviously they lost last night, but that's not the only thing that happened. Maybe the game of the tournament happened. Big money in the NBA as well. All of that as we continue right here live on The Drive.